I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear I've got morning voice?
Bit of morning voice.
It's only 9:47.
This is very early for us.
Very early for me as well. I do not know how we did a breakfast show for years.
Oh, 6 in the morning we started.
Yes, which meant, you know, you would be in just before 4, I think. Oh, I'd be in just after 4.
I feel ill.
And generally in life, I have a policy of not doing anything before 10 a.m. because that is the bare minimum time in the day. Point at which I feel normal enough to speak to another human being.
Got you 12 minutes early.
I know.
Wow.
Hence the croaky voice. Mm. And we're doing this on Wednesday morning, so I imagine the podcast will be in your ears slightly late, and that's because we tried to record it remotely last night. I don't mean emotionally remotely. Although maybe it always is a bit emotionally remote.
On my side.
On your side. Yeah. But a strange thing happened. It felt a lot like I was speaking to you in a disaster zone.
Yeah, so we were recording over this thing.
And like a video call, like a Zoom, but not.
And you could see my face.
Just about. I mean, it looked like, not a hostage video, but it looked like, you know, if there's a reporter on the TV reporting from a war zone, and then... You know, it's so bad there that all the power has gone out.
Yeah.
So they're using emergency lighting.
Oh, God.
And the equipment they're using doesn't get a clear signal, and it's sort of glitching and pixelated. That's how it looked and sounded.
Yeah, yeah. We had to abandon because I kept freezing as well. It's not ideal, really, is it, when trying to have a conversation
with someone?
No,
you're very nesh, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's your poor circulation. You should put the heating on. Have you still got the heating on?
Yeah, yeah.
I know you're funny about that. Like you put it on late in the year.
No, I'm fine. No, it's freezing. Been
yeah,
in my
yeah,
house.
I know, the coldest
house in England. It's still on.
I know, but you're one of these people who say there's a cold day in October, you won't put the heating on.
I think up past September, I won't in September. October, I will now.
The lighting situation in your house is nothing to do with your paper. What's it called? Your electric meter.
Oh. Guess what?
Well, you have to put coins in it.
I booked someone to come round last Friday to turn my pay-as-you-go electricity meter into a smart meter. They came round, couldn't do it.
I don't understand. This is like, so once every few years, you will tell me that somebody's come round your house to change this coin meter into a normal electric meter, and they arrive and they shake their head and they say it can't be done.
Yeah, yeah.
What is going on? Because, I in 1994, I lived in a bedsit, and it had a coin meter.
Yeah,
and you would see those around from time to time.
Mm.
These days, not so much. So there must be a process of changing those old meters into a new meter.
Yeah.
Why is it so impossible in your house?
Can I just say that I don't put a coin in it? You do know that, don't you?
Well, let's not get bogged down in details.
It's quite an important detail that I'm not putting coins in. I haven't got a coin on a string that I put in and pull out again. Although when I'm thinking about it, I wish I could. I mean, I'm going to get boring if I start explaining
it. Can you just give us a headline?
It's something to do with how my meter is connected to my upstairs neighbour's meter, and he won't do anything without National Grid there because he thinks we're trying to blow him up. Bit paranoid.
Oh, okay.
So it's neighbours' problems, meters' problems.
Can't you sue him?
Oh, God, as if I can be bothered to do that. Come on. I still got a page to go electricity meter, like 13 years living there. I'm going to sue someone.
I think using that electricity meter sounds more laborious than suing your neighbour.
Really?
Yes.
It is a pain. It is a massive pain.
Yeah, you could represent yourself in court.
Oh, that's going to go well, isn't it?
Wouldn't that fulfil some kind of little daydream that you've had about being a lawyer in court?
No, I've never had that daydream.
Really?
No,
you have a lot of daydreams.
But you know what? I think I might do now. You've given me one for tonight. That might be... I've never had that one.
Like walking up and down, making your impassioned closing statement.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there'd be no jury in this particular situation, but you could really ham it up for the magistrates.
I've gone off the idea now. I've really gone off it, yeah.
What daydreams have you had recently?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to tell them.
No, go on. I love hearing... Because I'm not a daydreamer and I love hearing your daydreams.
I've told you them all before.
But what's the most recent daydream
there's
you had?
There's two. There's one that I come back to time and time again and I'm doing it a lot at the moment is when when MI5 come round and it turns out I've got a twin. my mum didn't realise she was having twins.
Yeah.
So when she was giving birth, she realised and panicked. And the midwife...
Imagine panicking whilst giving birth.
And the midwife said, oh, don't worry, I know a couple who can't conceive. We'll give one of them to them. But anyway, yeah, and the twin goes on to... I can't believe I'm telling you this.
Go on.
The twin goes on to be an MI5. And they need me for this, like, big sting. Because we're identical twins.
Can I give you a better version?
Yeah.
The twin has gone on to become, like, a despot who's a national threat to security.
Yeah.
And they need to use you as a decoy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, like you've got an evil twin. Because evil twins are better than good twins, aren't they?
Oh, no, but...
Because then you would be the evil twin.
No,
if you had like a really good twin who was a hero, then because there's always one good one and one evil one.
But I think part of my daydream is just really wanting a twin.
Mm.
And I don't want an evil one. I want one like me. That's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel sad now.
What's the other daydream?
Oh, I'm not going to say it.
Please,
No, I'll tell another time.
Tell us now. Everybody loved that one. I'm telling you, I've got a good instinct for this stuff. People loved hearing
I'll give you like a hint of what it is. It's like, it involves me being a hero.
Oh, do you die in the process?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
You don't have any martyr fantasies?
No.
Do you save more than one person in this?
That's, I'm not saying anymore.
Will you tell us next week?
Maybe.
You know that I will have forgotten about it by next week. You know me so well.
Yeah.
So lots happened since the last podcast.
Okay.
Firstly, last night I fell down some stairs.
Oh, you had a nasty fall.
In public.
Oh.
Sort of in public. I'd been at my therapist's office and then as I was leaving, she's on the third floor. And as I was leaving, I'd say on the half flight of stairs between one and ground, I took a tumble because I was looking at my phone.
Oh, Jeff.
And it happened. I'm fine. I've got a couple of grazes. I'm absolutely fine. And you know me, I'm a big baby. Even if there was like something even a little bit wrong, I'd be moaning about it for the next half hour. But I am so overdramatic that if anything slightly surprising happens to me, I yelp in a very alarming way.
Mm-mm.
So as I fell, I go, like that.
Right.
And it was so loud that both my therapist on the top floor of the building and somebody else came out of their offices and shouted down the stairwell to ask if I was okay.
Oh, no.
It's not good, people asking if you're okay, is it?
And you weren't even in.
Fine, thanks. Yeah, all fine.
Oh.
Yeah, not good. So there was that.
I think you falling down the stairs at your therapist is even sadder than me fantasizing about having a twin.
I think my next session is going to be... Is going to be about the fall.
Yeah.
I'm so overreactive.
I think that's normal.
I had an idea for a detective series. I don't know if this would be a book or TV show. I'm almost seeing it like Nordic noir.
Mm.
So you've got a grizzled detective.
Mm-hmm.
All the usual stuff. You know, they've got an unhealthy relationship with both alcohol and their estranged children.
Mm-hmm.
Personal life is a mess, but very sharp brain.
Okay.
Like hone in, like see details that other people can make connections, all that. But they're very overreactive, and in their long career as a detective, it's never left them. So, for example, they're at a crime scene and they see like a corpse that has been brutally murdered.
Mm.
Like when the coroner pulls the bit of tarpaulin off, they go, "Oh my god, jeez! Oh my god! I can't! I'm feeling bilious." And someone pulls a gun on them. Like, Jesus Christ, it's a gun.
It is definitely TV, and I love it.
The overreactive detective.
I love it. I hope someone makes that.
I hope so too. So the other thing that has happened since we last recorded a podcast together, I think the day after you left here, I got a UTI.
Oh, no. That is the worst normal thing that can happen to someone.
Let me tell you, there's one worse thing.
Go on.
And it happened to me.
Go on.
Being berated by my wife for allowing my immune system to get to a point where I could get a UTI.
What? Really?
Oh, yeah.
You got told off for having a UTI?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's good, isn't it?
That's not good.
Like, I feel bad saying it because she also went to the chemist and picked up a prescription. There was this whole thing and she had to go to the GP and then back to the chemist. Mm. So in terms, this is an interesting thing. It's a bit like you go to a restaurant, the food is fantastic, the room is wonderful, the company is great, but the waiter is surly. Mm. That can ruin the night, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like with the UTI, Sarah did all the things. So I was out of commission for 3 days. I was not in a good way. It was antibiotics. It was all up my back. Oh, Annabelle.
Oh,
yeah. So she did all, you know, she took on the childcare that I was supposed to be doing. And she went, as I say, fetched antibiotics and things and you know, brought me things when I needed them. But she was also like furious with me for being ill because of the way in which it inconvenienced her.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I am in my rights to feel slightly disgruntled at the anger or it's just basically being married, isn't it?
When she gets one, what you're going to do is you're going to lavish her with love and affection.
Well, I try and teach.
Model good behaviour.
Model good behaviour.
Like she's a child.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. And I did a bit of Googling of UTIs, and I don't think you get a UTI because you've let things slip with your immune system.
I was wondering. I mean, I thought it's something to do with not drinking enough water. Is that right?
No.
Oh, go on.
I read on the NHS website.
Oh, okay.
That it's usually about poo somehow getting into your urinary tract, which for a lady, I can kind of understand it because there's a wiping thing.
Yeah, but you're doing it in different directions.
Yes, no, but there's the specific advice on the NHS website to think about the direction in which you wipe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that can be a thing if you have different equipment down there.
Right.
But I can't see how that's happened to me. Now, I know...
I can.
Well, I know you... let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Never.
What? Never what?
The thing you're thinking.
I wasn't thinking that.
Weren't you?
No.
Okay.
What were you thinking?
Nothing.
I wasn't thinking that.
Right, me either.
Okay.
But if you're thinking that, definitely not that.
Okay, okay. Oh, I know what you thought. Okay,
right.
I wasn't thinking that.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking that.
So...
Oh, no, when I said I know, I didn't mean that. I just thought that maybe... I mean, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd had, like... an explosive bowel movement.
Oh, and so,
and some like,
yeah, but splashed back.
Splashed
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
Went up there.
I mean, it's possible. It feels a bit like the end of Star Wars, where Luke Skywalker's like he's got to fire that laser bolt into a very, very small, hole in
right.
which the odds of doing so are astronomically
yeah,
low.
But think of how
and
many
he has to use the force.
Think of how many like explosive bowelments you have. Like I feel like you have three a day. Like the odds are actually like very much not in your favour.
You know what I've been doing?
What?
Drinking a lot of cranberry juice.
That worked, does it?
I don't know. I mean, this is what people say, isn't it?
I'm not sure it's true.
I wonder if that's been put about by the cranberry farmers.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like we talked about the Association of Mushroom Growers
no
last week.
No one's drinking it otherwise.
No.
And it says there's one cocktail, isn't there? No, apart from that, no one's drinking it otherwise. They've got to have something to sell their wares.
And I think that's what it is. I think it's the cranberry farmers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cranberry. Oh, can I just say the mushroom thing from last week? And was it the National Trust banning mushrooms from their cafes?
Not true.
Yeah. Somebody came at me on Twitter about it.
I've sacked our fact checkers.
Okay.
They're no longer working for us. It is sort of true.
You know, I feel that we came dangerously close. You can't slander an organisation, but whatever the equivalent is, defaming them, I don't know.
If they're not suing The Guardian, they're not suing us.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this whole thing about cranberry and urine is just the thing that's been put about by cranberry farmers, if there are such things.
There must be.
I don't think about
growing themselves.
No, I know, but it's funny, isn't it? Berry farmer. I think of berries as things that you just go for a stroll in the woods with a basket.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, wild. Yeah, but I don't think, for example, Tesco's are just going out into the wild and like collecting cranberries and turning them into juice.
You don't think who either or both Mr. and Mrs. Driscoll are? They're not just like going out and collecting those berries.
Who's Mrs. Driscoll?
Have you not noticed that most? Well, I suppose because you go to supermarkets. Oh, this is one of those things where I'm the weird one because I don't shop in supermarkets. Okay. I don't boycott supermarkets, as previously discussed. There just isn't one near me.
Yeah.
Most berries come in one of those horrible little plastic containers that never stay shut.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's no receptacle for a berry that doesn't involve a high risk of spilling.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But most of them, the brand on it is Driscoll's.
Okay. Okay.
But that's perhaps not the universal observation that I thought.
No, sorry.
But maybe it's not just people strolling in the woods.
Mm.
I just don't like thinking of cranberries being farmed, but I don't really like thinking of anything being farmed, really.
Oh.
You know, even with dairy, you know, so obviously I've got my stuff with animal slaughter, but then I will justify my dairy stuff to myself by thinking of a milkmaid.
Don't look it up.
No,
never look it up.
No, I've refused to acknowledge even the possibility that cows are like being inseminated and then just are hooked up to machines for most of their lives. Mm. Here's what I see: little stool.
Yeah.
Milkmaid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Singing.
Good.
While she does it, and the cow is enjoying the singing.
Ooh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want a livid denial, please. The email, Annabelle, how is it looking?
Oh, I've got to have a couple of earliest Drifter memories to start with.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. So the first one's from Hannah. For some reason, an example popped into my head just now of one of my earliest realisations that I was, although not yet able to name it, a solid Drifter. Back in the days before mobile phones, I rang a friend after school, probably to talk about homework or boys or something equally dull. Because it was on the landline, her dad answered. Me, hello, can I speak to Roz, please? Him, yes, of course. Distantly, Roz, it's Sarah on the phone. Me, not Sarah. Oh, no. Roz picks up, hi. Me, hiya. Roz, have you thought of anything yet? Me, no. Roz, oh, okay. Bye then. Me. Bye.
Oh, no.
Click. To this day, I've never found out what Roz and Sarah were discussing, but not resolving on the phone. We've also presumably never resolved whatever I was phoning for either.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Just let me lean around here and grab my coffee without knocking anything over.
Right. Next one's from Aliki, and this is her first Drifter memory. For context, I am Greek, grew up in Greece, but went to a British school. In Greece, as in some other countries, we celebrate carnival time before Lent. I must have been 5 years old, and one sunny afternoon I was playing in the school playground. Being the clumsy kid I was, I ran right in front of the swings and inevitably got hit by one. It hit me on the side of the face, with the greatest impact being on the ear. Obviously, it was very painful and I cried a lot. A kind, caring teacher came to my rescue and sat me on her lap, trying to console me. She gave me a sip of her milky tea, my first ever, as I was growing up in a Greek household where coffee was the only hot beverage consumed. To this day, I'm an avid tea drinker. She then further attempted to console me by telling me my ear was so red all over that I was ready for carnival time, no outfit needed. I was shocked and horrified at the thought of so much blood all over my ear. Why is she not taking me to the nurse or at least getting a tissue if I'm bleeding so badly? And why is she just joking around instead? That is what's going through my mind. But did I say that to her? Oh, no, I did not. Why? Because I'd rather sit quietly being terrified than make any fuss. So I just sat there in silence, imagining all the blood dripping everywhere and nobody doing anything about it. Only later did I realise, of course, there was no blood. The skin of my ear was just bright red from the rush of blood due to the impact. What a relief. And this is from Tiff. After hearing Jeff talk about being misidentified as Jean's grandfather, it reminded me of the two times I've had it happen to me.
Oh, Tiff.
First was the time I'd taken a friend to have her cast off after she'd broken her ankle. We went to McDonald's after. She was on crutches, so I was carrying her pink backpack. An older gentleman saw us come in and said to me something along the lines of, "Got her out of school early, hey, mum?" My friend is 3 years younger than me. Second, while I was clearing out my mum's house, a 30-something cousin was helping take empty boxes to the tip. I noticed the woman chatting him up and started to tease him about it after she left. He looked embarrassed and asked if I'd heard what she said. I told him no, and he told me she said that she was nice to see him helping his mum. I guess I just look like a mum.
Oh, Tiff. Well, let's have more of your stories of life in the Drifterdom, the Drifterverse. Mm-hmm. I really like that earliest drifting memories. That's great. So more of those, please. The email address is hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle.
Yes.
Oh, I'm drooping.
You're right.
I'm having real issues with my microphone drooping today. There we go. What's going on in your Substack?
Oh, thanks for asking. So this week, there was something that happened to me, something that I saw 2 months ago now that I cannot stop thinking about. Remember Sarah Beeny? We loved Sarah Beeny.
Oh, yeah.
She's a property expert, TV presenter, lots of business she's got on the go.
Like she had a dating app for a while, didn't she?
Yeah, she's got like a property website. Anyway, we loved her. She's brilliant. She did a post on Instagram. You're right there, Paul McCartney.
Oh, my God.
Jeff's eating a pastry while I'm talking. I know it's breakfast time. That's fine. It's fine.
Listen, do you want to get into this?
Why?
We're here this morning because your internet was so bad last night we couldn't record, right?
I know.
Because you're on dial-up.
I'm not on dial-up.
Aren't you? Because it felt like it.
I know it did.
And I've recently taken some medication that I shouldn't have taken on an empty stomach. So I'm just trying to line my stomach a little bit.
It's medicinal.
And also, as you point out, if it's good enough for a beetle, because Paul McCartney would often eat while being interviewed by us.
Pastries. Why not? They were there. I don't blame him.
I think that was just an indication of how comfortable he felt with us.
That's what I think too. Mm. Please carry on. My Substack. So she put a video on Instagram recently, 2 months ago, in fact, and it showed how she said her husband didn't like the way that she emptied her dishwasher, which was she took the little basket for the cutlery. Mm-hmm. She took it out, picked it up and then just emptied it into the drawer. I don't have an issue with that. Great, fine, do that. What I have an issue with is her drawer didn't have any little dividers in it. It was just like all the cutlery was all like messed up and like...
But then how could you just tip a basket into it if it wasn't like that?
Well, you couldn't and you shouldn't, really. But the fact that...
But you just said you didn't have an issue with
it. No, because that was the imperfect way of dealing with the situation.
Oh, I see.
Like, it'd be weird if she had a divider there and then she was pouring it in.
Yeah.
Like, but it'd be equally weird if she was taking out each individual bit of cutlery and putting it into a messed up drawer. Mm. That'd be even weirder.
But it's part of you not thinking maybe she's a genius and, like, we've all drunk the divider Kool-Aid.
So this is what I'm going to get into.
Okay. Well,
basically, what it is... It's not mug chat, it's cutlery chat. And it's very, very, very... My views on cutlery are quite strong and very interesting, let me tell you. So you want to get to my Substack pretty soon. It's Annabelle Port, that's my name. Just Google it. It'll come up probably.
Yeah.
Bit weird, quite normal, substack.com.
Okay. Well, here's my plan for the next few minutes.
You're going to eat.
I was thinking of settling in with a scone.
Because you're comfortable.
And, and listening to another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult.
Great.
And I think this will be nice for everybody because I'll try and chew off mic and it will mean that I'm not constantly derailing it every 10 seconds.
I like derailments. Okay. A way in which I'm not a fully functioning adult. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anything works, anything I own. I don't know. I mean, I do know the basics, obviously, but the extra stuff, like the advanced stuff that takes us out of the 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties and 10s to the present day, I just don't know it. I've got all the modern stuff, but it's like it's an Amish person using them. I'm going to give you some examples. I've had a mobile phone since I was 26. I think this is a thing in life that ages us the most, just saying that sentence, that we didn't have phones or use the internet until our 20s. And like for me, the late 20s. Like my first phone, you could only store 10 text messages on it. In a way, that feels nice now because there was much less digital clutter, but also not nice because I use the messages on my phone as a search engine for my friends. Like it's an address book, it's a birthday book. It's basically a dossier on my friends so I know when big stuff has happened to them and how to spell their boyfriend's name, etc., etc. So many etc.s. Anyway, my very basic first phone, that's what it did. But I had an iPhone now for many years, probably about 15 years. Do you want to know something amazing? My first
iPhone. You had an iPhone before they came out?
Came out 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah. So you had one of the first iPhones. It seems very unlikely.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Shall I change that to like 12 years? Maybe 10 years. Yeah. It does seem unlikely to be an early adopter. Mm. I'm going to go 13 years. Mm. So my very first iPhone, I'd kept it. I ended up giving it to my mum about 8 years ago and it still works. She uses it.
Oh, wow.
That is extraordinary because they don't last very long now, do they?
No.
But the first ones, I think they hadn't worked out they need to build in some obsolescence. I shouldn't say that, should I? I think they just don't, maybe because we use them more now, but that, I don't know. I find it amazing that she still uses it. So I've had an iPhone for years and I'd always felt that I used all the features apart from the Stocks app. One that always driven me mad is when doing one of my 392 Google searches a day, that tiny little keyboard, I'm always pressing the letter next to the one I want. It's really annoying.
Yes.
Very, very recently, like 2 weeks ago, I saw on the right-hand side of the search bar a little microphone. I'm sure I'd seen it before, but just hadn't registered in my mind. But finally it did, and I pressed it, and it made a noise like it wanted me to say something. So I did. And I realised it was voice-activated search. Completely life-changing. Completely. Mm. Now I just like talking to my phone when I need it to look up stuff for me.
Do you not find it embarrassing?
Well, this is the thing. So now I have to do it like really, really quietly because like it's embarrassing. I don't want anyone to hear what I Google because, oh my God, the stuff I Google. I had to look at my search history. Most of it I'm too embarrassed to mention. But here's one from this week. And I've been driving for 32 years. I'd Googled single yellow line meaning. I should know what that means, don't I?
You should have your license revoked.
No. So I did know about Siri before this. Like I'd used Siri. I know Siri, like that's voice activated. I'd used that a couple of times before it first came out. And I think all I'd said was, Siri, do you fancy me for a joke? And that was it. But I thought it was never very good. Maybe it's got better now. Maybe I should start using it again. Because my fingers are seizing up now from lack of use. Now I've got this voice activated search, which I'm quite enjoying. My dishwasher has only got 5 buttons on it. I realised the other day that I don't know what 2 out of those 5 do. And while I was in the kitchen, I thought I'd look at the washing machine and I pressed some buttons I'd never looked at before. And I was amazed to discover you can change the speed of the spin and you can also add a pre-wash and an extra rinse. Why don't I know any of this stuff? I'm worried about what I'm missing out on. And like, is everyone not missing out on this? Is like, are they reading manuals all night? Like, how does everyone else know this stuff? Oh, here's another recent discovery. Google Password Manager. I just thought with passwords that you guessed until you could guess no more and then you reset the password and then you choose a new one, which it then tells you was your old password. I thought that was the process. So you then pick another one that will never be remembered. I didn't know that my laptop holds a little savant servant who keeps them all for me. This is also life-changing. My car, I can drive it. I can open the windows. I can turn on the lights and the windscreen wipers. That is it. Honestly, I dread to think what else it can do that I don't know. Possibly there's a button that you press to get the blades come out of the hubcaps in case you're in a drag race at Thunder Road and need to slash the side of the greased lightning car. And this is the thing that worries me most. So I'm going to spend most of them this week reading my manual. You're right there. Mouthful.
I misjudged that last mouthful.
Yeah.
I just think that, I mean, I know they won the race, so what matters in the end?
Yeah.
But if they spent more time working on that car and less time singing,
yeah,
they could have had blades too.
Oh, man. It was a big mistake. Mm.
How'd you do with that bit of that film?
What do you mean by how do I do? You're saying, is it my favourite? Do I hate it?
Here's what I'm saying. Mm. You've got a big problem with Beauty School Dropout because we go into an environment that is no longer real. It's like an imagined dreamlike.
I don't like it when the T-Birds are all dressed up as like angels and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
so you feel uncomfortable boots. with that Beauty School Dropout.
Yeah.
Grease Lightning sort of goes into as a sort of like an unrealistic studio, like not quite dream sequence, but you know what I mean, fantasy sequence.
I tell you what I think I'm getting better at. I think I'm getting better at thinking, well, this is just
in the, how. It's not a documentary.
I'm getting better at thinking with Beauty School Dropout and that scene in Grease Lightning that it's just how they're seeing it in there. Actually, Grease Lightning less so. That scene, no, sorry, Beauty School Dropout less so. That scene in Grease Lightning I can cope with because that's just how it is in their head, how they're fantasizing it. Mm. She's like, Frenchie's just on her own. That's weird. And I also will never be able to cope with that car leaving at the end. It ruins the end of the film for me.
Do you think that Frenchie fantasizing that is less weird than you fantasizing about this whole MI5 twin situation?
Very possibly. Very possibly. Yeah.
We should just talk about Grease every week.
Oh, yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You've carried on this thing of sending me some clippings because you feel sorry for me, mm-hmm. and because it was too excruciating for you to sit there and watch me flailing around trying to think of things to talk about, like an upturned turtle. So first one is this. It's a headline from The Guardian. Controversial Titanic floating door prop sells for $718,750. Now, this is a prop from the film Titanic, as you will have gleaned from the headline there. Mm. And the story is that this thing has been sold at auction, but it's a controversial prop.
Yes, why? Why?
Because at the end of the film Titanic, spoiler alert. Mm. I haven't seen it, but my understanding is...
Sorry, stop. You haven't seen Titanic?
No.
Okay. Oh, you look horrified. Okay.
Do you know how long it is?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's long. Yeah. Well, it's 3 hours or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I think it's long. We know what happens.
Yeah.
And it all takes place on the confines... what is happening that's so interested in that film?
Oh no, it's good. I think I saw it like 30 years ago. No, I'm exaggerating again, like my iPhone. I saw it 20 years ago. It's good. It is good.
She's blown a gasket, Captain. This is all stuff like that.
No, it's a love story.
Yeah, well, I like love stories, but yeah. Do you know who I've got a BM on it about? But we don't have time for this. But Leonardo DiCaprio.
What with his younger girlfriends or something?
Yeah,
else?
that, and also something going on with his face.
Okay, what good lookingness? What do you mean?
No, actually, it's not. Yeah, maybe it's that. But here's what I think.
Yeah.
I think he gets slightly too much credit for his acting because of how good looking he is / was.
Okay. I'm not a good judge of whether someone's a good actor or not. I can't tell. So I think he's good, but who knows?
I think most acting, not all, because I think, you know, brilliant acting is brilliant acting, but most of the people who we see acting who are thought of as the greatest of their generation, it's the truth is that they can act fine and they've got nice faces that we like looking at.
That's a very interesting point.
You know, I don't...
I can think of someone straight away who I think falls into that category, but I don't want to say it because me.
No. Yeah. But it's okay. So I think it's okay for me to say that about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, I was thinking
because
someone
of the younger
English.
Girlfriends.
Yeah.
Was it Jude Law?
No.
Oh.
Is he a bad actor? No.
I don't know. Was it Andrew Lincoln?
No.
Okay.
Is he a bad actor?
Listen, I don't know. I have seen very little of Andrew Lincoln's work. What I have seen is Love Actually. And I think his acting in that is some of the most staggeringly bad acting I've seen him in life.
Okay.
Now, that film has got a whole raft of other problems and actors are only as good as the material they're working with.
Yeah.
But I would encourage anybody. There's a scene in that film that is soundtracked by Dido, which I think really evokes an era, doesn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
And... Keira Knightley has come to his place of work and she now knows that he has a crush on her.
Mm.
And he leaves the office in a panic and does some walking and doesn't quite know what he's thinking, and he's in a bit of a state. And the acting in that, I feel, is bad to the point of it being comical.
Okay.
Like, if somebody wanted to show you what the stereotype of bad Amdram is, I think it's that. It's,
how many times have you seen this film?
Annually.
Because I've seen it once, so I have no memory of that scene you're talking about.
So I'm not a hate watcher, generally.
Right.
But Sarah and I do hate watch. And then you have to question, like, is it really a hate watch if you watch it every year?
Well, exactly, because you're loving it.
Yeah.
So love to hate watch. Yeah.
I mean, there's a piece written by somebody, Tanya somebody, I've forgotten who now, sort of pulling Love Actually apart, which came out about 10 years ago, which is the sort of definitive takedown of Love Actually.
Okay.
But it is terrible in all these different... But the reason I'm... So, I've told you this. The reason we're so obsessed with it is Sarah's brother, Sam, when he was at university, for I think a couple of years, him and his college flatmate would get high on marijuana every day and watch Love Actually.
Okay.
So he has noticed all these weird things that nobody would ever notice.
Oh, amazing.
And his sort of obsession with this British rom-com is so funny to me that I've ended up watching it every year for several years.
But I really want to watch it again now.
Can I watch it with
your brother-in-law's notes?
Yes.
I would love that.
Because I interviewed Richard Curtis once and Sam gave me this whole list of things. The writer, I don't know, director, I don't know. But... whole list of things that he'd noticed. And Richard Curtis, who I think has been asked about this film a lot because it is a perennial and people have problems with it, all this weird stuff that Sam had noticed that he, like, nobody had ever asked him about before. So for example, there's a scene where Colin Firth, his character, has found out his wife has cheated on him with his brother, so he leaves and goes to a cottage in, I think, France to write a novel, you know, and put himself back together again, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
And then he falls in love with
the
cleaner who doesn't speak English.
Yeah, yeah.
Power dynamic doesn't feel great in that in this day and age. Mm-hmm. But there's a point at which all the pages of the novel blow up into the air and go into a small lake outside the house. And they kind of, their moment in which they start falling in love is that they both, like, jump into the lake to retrieve the pages. And Sam had noticed something weird about the way they're swimming in this lake.
Right, right.
That just didn't look right. So he asked me to ask Richard Curtis about it. And then the truth of it was that the lake is, like, not even a metre deep.
Oh.
And they had to go on their knees and pretend they were swimming.
Oh, I can't wait to see that bit again.
So he's noticed all this, like, weird stuff like that.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Back to Titanic, though.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, where were we? Yeah.
So at the end of this film, I believe the ending is, I mean, you tell me, Kate Winslet's character survives using a piece of wood as a raft.
Yeah.
And Leonardo DiCaprio's character drowns because there is no raft for him and there's no room on this piece of wood.
That's really sad.
Okay. Now, this prop is controversial because many people have said over the years, there's enough room on that piece of the wood for the both of them.
Oh, right, right.
Anyway.
Right, right.
So then this prop has been sold. And in the news story about it, the director of the film, James Cameron, says that in 2022, he conducted a trial, like a scientific study,
right,
to debunk that theory.
Good.
So he says... said there was a scientific study to put this whole thing to the test. To put this whole thing to rest and drive a stake through its heart once and for all.
A bit aggressive.
We have since done a thorough forensic analysis with a hypothermia expert who reproduced the raft from the movie. We took two stunt people who were the same body mass as Kate and Leo, and we put sensors all over them and inside them, and we put them in ice water, and we tested to see whether they could have survived through a variety of methods, and the answer was there was no way they both could have survived. Only one could survive.
Because the weight of two of them would have pushed it down?
Well, yeah, I don't have the data.
Like the obvious
but
ones.
Yeah. I mean, that's, but I'm staggered at that information, which I think is a couple of years old.
Right.
But What a terrible waste of money.
It's extraordinary. Like, what was the point?
But this is,
you know what the point was? He was proving a point.
Yes.
He didn't like people criticising the end of his film, and he needed to prove it. Imagine having enough money to be able to prove every point. I'd be doing it every single time. Every single time. I'd be so happy. That's what happiness is.
Because that must have cost like easily six figures, right?
Do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Which, of course, somebody like James Cameron is nothing. But the point is, it's still money that you could have given to charity.
No, but he got to prove a point, which is far greater for your own happiness.
Because it's not like, so say you're a cranberry farmer and people start saying cranberries are bad for you.
Right.
Then that affects your income.
Oh, I see. People are still watching Titanic.
But the money's the point about Titanic is the money's in the bank.
Right,
already banked that money.
Yeah.
It doesn't do his
reputation though, isn't it? It's reputation.
excuse me.
He couldn't go to his grave knowing that people thought he was wrong when he knew he was right. He couldn't do it. And I love him for it. I love him.
Quandary Corner at the Glap Clinic here in Problematic.
Let's start with Craig.
Is this long enough for me to just finish? Look, this is how much scone I've got left.
Yes. I want everyone to know that this isn't a scone with like cream and jam. It's just a plain dry scone.
Yeah, the guy in the cafe expressed some surprise when he found out I was eating it dry.
Yeah.
But it's so no nice. Butter, it's freshly baked, okay. So it's very moist.
Great. A man who I give a lift to once a week is in the process of starting up a personal training business. On one of our car journeys back to his house, I was chatting to him about my running and saying I'd like to start doing some strength training in the gym. He said to me he could take me for a taster session at his gym on a free guest pass, which I thanked him for and understood to be a purely friendly gesture as thanks for giving him a lift every week, the least he could do. Fast forward a few months and he brings the topic up again, but he has quite a short memory and it turned out his memory of the conversation was that I wanted a full personal training session with him and he told me he'd send me an invoice the next day with a special discount for being one of his first customers. Due to some technical issues, I didn't receive the invoice and he kept trying to send it to me for the next couple of weeks. I eventually received it and it turned out to be mate's rate. That turned out the mate's rate he was offering me was £75. Certainly not something I was willing to pay. Every week in the car on the journey home, he would ask me when we would book it. And every week I'd fob him off with some excuse. Eventually, I said I wouldn't be in a position to do it for several months due to other commitments. This worked for a couple of weeks until he forgot what I'd said and asked me again. And this time I had to finally let him down gently and say I didn't have time for it at the moment and wouldn't for the foreseeable future, but would happily recommend him to his friends. Of course, he then asked me which friends and if he could contact them to sign them up. What can I do to get out of this mess?
Oh my God, I mean, what a personality type.
Can I say, first of all, about your friend, Craig, they're lying about this memory thing.
Yeah, it's a hustle.
Yeah, it's a hustle. They're not going to give up. They are not going to give up.
So I know this guy, I've told you about him. He's a life insurance salesman and it's what he lives for. And if he's in a lift with somebody, he'll try and sell them life insurance. If he's sitting next to somebody at a cafe, he'll try and sell them life insurance. He will cold call some of the most powerful like politicians and business executives in the world and try and sell them life insurance. And some people just have that to them. Shamelessness. Is that funny? Like I use that word with such judgment. Mm-hmm. Shamelessness. Like shame is a good thing.
But do you wish you had a bit of it to you?
So I do wish I had a bit of shame. Yeah, what we'll call shamelessness. But I'd rather have self-awareness. Because I think that's what I think that's where the line is, isn't it?
I want both.
Where does shamelessness become a lack of self-awareness?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, here's what I'm very intrigued by. How did he, like, bully his way into you giving him a lift in the first place? Because I think it's the same thing. It's the same thing, isn't it?
He's never going to let go of this. I think with these people, I think they're quite thick-skinned because they have to be. And I think you have to treat them as such with quite a firm hand and just say, look, if I'm going to keep giving you lifts, if you mention those sessions one more time, I'm going to explode.
Oh, here's the thing I've noticed with my friend who's the life insurance salesman, is how thick their skin is.
That's what I just said.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking about his modus operandi is he invites people to breakfast on him at one of the most luxurious hotel hotel dining rooms in the world, right. Like in London.
Yeah.
And so therefore in the world. And then you're sort of so dazzled and you feel in hock to him for buying you this lavish breakfast,
right.
That you sign up for a life insurance policy.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And then once you're a client of his, about every year he'll say, do you want to come for breakfast?
Okay.
And then he upsells your policy, like says, well, you know, what if you died? I mean, think about how your family would be. I mean, don't you want to leave him a little bit more to be going on with?
Mm.
Then you think, yeah, I probably do. You know, I mean, so your premiums keep going up. And anyway, as my financial situation changed, I would get myself into terrible knots about declining these breakfasts because I didn't want to offend him.
Mm.
And then this year, I just sent him a message saying, I'd love a breakfast with you, but I am skint and there's no way I can afford any more life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, oh, sure, it'd be good to see you anyway.
Oh.
So they don't care. It's just you need to be direct with them because because they're so direct.
Yeah, yeah,
they don't understand people not being direct.
They don't understand any kind of nuance.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They don't understand that you're just sort of putting them off. They don't get it because they've got a different brain to you.
Yes.
These creatures.
Yes.
So you just need to say, look.
Psychopaths. Not that I think my friend who's a life insurance salesman is a psychopath.
Say, look, I mentioned it to a few friends. They're not interested. Can we leave it there?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. I mean, good luck.
Or the other idea I had for you is, what month are we into? March now, so it'll soon be April. Weather's getting warmer.
Mm.
Do you really need to be driving a car? Couldn't you get a bicycle?
Yeah, there you go. That one. If it gets too painful, that's going to help.
But don't get a tandem.
No, no, definitely not. Okay.
Also, you could say, oh, I've just decided to ride my bike instead of doing any personal training.
Oh, yeah. But it doesn't matter what you say because this person's got thick skin. We can tell.
Yeah.
Ross says, yesterday I went to the cinema to see The Holdovers. A fab film, by the way.
Mm, it's good.
That's not the point of my tale. I hate sitting next to random people I don't know unless I have to because the venue is full. So I often go to the cinema in the afternoons to avoid these awkward situations. I booked online and deliberately choose a seat in the middle of the row, well away from others. The aisle seats I usually book as in very tall are taken. What does that mean? The aisle seats I usually book as in very tall are taken.
Hang on. Right. So the aisle seats.
The aisle seats.
Very tall people like them, right?
Yeah.
And they're taken.
I think there's a word missing there. That's okay. I check the seating plan when I arrive at the cinema and I'm still fine all alone. Then, just as the lights go down, two ladies come and sit in the two seats to the right of me. Bit annoying as there are free seats all over the cinema. Anyway, as the film starts, a young couple walk along my row and sit in the two seats immediately to the left of me.
Oh,
I'm now totally blocked in by four random people to the left and to the right.
Stuck in the middle with you.
Now there are three empty seats beyond this couple to the left, but they choose to invade my space and sit next to me. I'm feeling really claustrophobic, but do I get up and move? No, of course not. I'm a social drifter. I start this bizarre campaign of passive aggression by deliberately eating popcorn very loudly and trying to take ownership of the seat armrests. But these people still don't move into the empty seats beyond where they are sat. Why, oh why, didn't I just move seats myself? Is it me? But I would never, ever, by choice, sit next to random people if there are empty seats elsewhere.
I want to say you did the right thing because the rule is no moving after the film starts.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
You can move during that thing that they play after the trailers, which tells you how great the Dolby sound is and how, you know, switch your phone off and just enjoy the experience.
But talk me through this moving. Honestly, would you do this if you were hemmed in like that and you could see some free seats ahead of you? Would you just get up and move and not say anything?
I wouldn't want to.
But would you do it?
I don't know if I would.
No,
But I think, like, if you, you know, you're rule follower, you sit in your allocated seat and then the film hasn't started, but it's in that thing with John Boyega.
I've not been to cinema for a while.
You can, let me just think this through. Like, I wouldn't want to, but say you've got a crummy allocated seat and then there's loads of empty better seats. I think it's okay to move that thing. But as soon as the British Board of Film Censorship thing comes up, there's no moving after that.
Yeah.
So that's the rule. And I mean, these people are scum of the earth for entering a film after it started. It's inexcusable.
I think what you need to do is...
No, can we just stay on this for a second?
Sorry, because, yeah, you want to.
There's no reason. Mm. If you're going to be that late for a film, swallow the cost of the tickets. It says on the listings, like, they treat us like idiots and tell us it starts 25 minutes before it does.
Yeah. So what's your excuse?
Yeah, there's no excuse for being more than 25 minutes late.
So even if it's just, like, what, the first 10 seconds?
Scum of the earth.
That's firm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I have my own stuff with executive function and time. But then if I think, oh, I'm going to be late, it's then on me, and I don't go to the cinema.
Even though you bought the ticket.
Yes, because life isn't you and.
Can you slip into the back?
Well, you can't, can you? Because, you know, you don't, unless you've got schematics of the cinema, you don't know if that's possible. So it's often the case. You don't know who you're going to be interrupting, who you're going to be walking past.
Okay.
I've got my own stuff with executive function and time management. Yeah, and I just think, my fault, I'll have to give this a skip swallow. Because you feel like you're the protagonist and everybody else is just an extra in your life.
Mm.
But that isn't how society works.
Well, I like a firm rule.
Yeah.
So I'll go along with it.
Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion to, what's the name, Craig? Ross, sorry. Ross. What you need to do is you need to prepare for this. So when you get in there early, which you've done, and you've got seats either side of you, and it's the afternoon, so it's never going to be full. I mean, what is wrong with these people? Do they need to sit in the middle? You know, you can see the film from the side, don't you? Like, I don't know what's wrong with these people. You need to put stuff either side of you.
Yes. So
I don't mind people doing that if it's in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah. So putting stuff on seats, I think, is often bad behaviour.
Nearly always, apart from this time.
But if it's a cinema with lots of empty seats and you just want to use it as a marker to say, don't sit here.
And if you don't have anything with you, I don't mind you putting just your feet up. Just sitting sideways with your legs out. Just take your shoes off first and your socks.
Splay those legs like you're in surgical
and I think
stirrups.
Then you're going to be safe.
Yeah, good. All sorted.
Okay.
And that's our podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have a quandary for Quandary Corner, if you have a story, especially of your earliest drifting memories, send them to us or a podication. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed the artwork. Also on the subject of Greece, who is the male character who... I mean, he looks closer to retirement than... he's one of the kids, but he looks closer to retirement.
Oh, well, one of the T-Birds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Than he is to school age.
Yeah. Is that not Doody?
Very thick set.
Yeah. Oh. I think he's actually 50. He was 50 when they filmed that. I'm not joking. I think he's 50.
I love it. He's like Jeanette Cranky. Podication time, and this comes from Brigadier Percival Withington, retired. Good day to you, Jeff, and good day to you, Annabelle.
Good day to you,
Brigadier. My wife, who seems to think I married her in 1972, has recently told me to stop it. This has made me furious, and I have now incurred her wrath further. Message continues. I recently discovered that I took her to the vet by way of a small error. She has proceeded to tell her friends about this, and I am now receiving unsolicited calls from said friends asking how it could have occurred. Am I right to be dumbfounded by this? Well, of course, Brigadier. I once, and she never mentions this to anyone, thus painting me in a bad light, as people never see the other side of the story.
Mm.
Two sides to every story. It's one of your big sayings, Annabelle, isn't it? Purchased a special edition Toby jug for her. It had big ears, granted, but I expected this. by the very nature of what it was. You don't want a small-eared Toby jug, do you?
Weird.
Heaven forbid. She was incandescent with rage and told me that she has absolutely no interest in Toby jugs that depict Indian spices and small men fishing in a well. In actual fact, she said even if she did like those things, which she does not, she didn't want a Toby jug of any description whatsoever. Mm. It is only the short notice that she provided me with that stopped me from buying her a welding mask made of ornate iron.
Oh, quite like the sound of that.
I'd like a Toby jug of the welder welding that mask.
Yes.
I do try my best, and indeed for this woman, but she leaves me little wiggle room when it comes to our relationship. With this in mind, would you please podicate a show to... Try that again.
Okay.
With this in mind, would you please podicate a show to her so that I can air these grievances publicly? Her name is Wanda, or so she tells me, and I'm quite tired of the lambastings that I receive. She also believes, although she has little to no evidence of this, that I once won a prize-winning chimney. I have no reason to doubt that.
No, why would any of us doubt that?
He has the air of a former steeplejack. When pressed on this matter, she's previously accused me of willful malevolence. By the time you read this out, I feel that I'll have fixed at least some of the outstanding issues by her preserve. Sorry. By the time you read this out, I feel that I'll have fixed at least some of the outstanding issues by presenting her with a life-size statue of a man that I believe is her Uncle Ray. To know what evidence you have for that.
Yes.
If it isn't him, then it's a damned good likeness. Although why it would be him, I have no real idea. I bought it on a recent trip to Skegness, and I don't believe he'd ever been there. He's also not noted for doing anything out of the ordinary or being famous in any way. I should be most grateful if you could dedicate this podcast to Wanda, if indeed that is her name. Mm. Around the 13th or the 20th of March, as she has a birthday every year and has done ever since she was a small child.
Sorry, March has been very busy. Sorry for the delay.
I thank you most vividly and wish you much love. That's really good that the Colonel is such a modern, I was going to say modern Major General, but modern Brigadier, that he's able to throw the word love around with such gay abandon.
He's
that,
got some heart.
Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah.
Kindest, Brigadier Percival Withington, retired. Well, there we go.
Lovely.
I hope that's all been attended to, the various requests therein.
Yeah.
And apologies
for the lateness of it.
Yeah, I won't apologise because it's entirely Annabelle's fault.
It's not my fault, but we had a lot of podcasts in March. I had to spread them out a bit.
You made a choice.
You
made a choice.
I'm going to spend £1 million proving my point.
You made a choice. You could have put James Cameron. All right. If you'd like a podcast, hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.